The no recourse clause is a staple of private equity deal practice for years and years and years. You most always find it in private equity deals, not so much in other kinds of deals, but particularly in private equity deals, because it's a staple of private equity deal practice that the private equity firm and the private equity principals do not want any exposure to any kind of personal liability under any circumstances, period, end of discussion. And if anybody even suggests that the private equity firm should be on the hook for anything, they will run, not walk, away from that deal. We heard a little bit about that from Joel yesterday, and it's a true statement. That is just so fundamental. It's private equity 101. And so the non-recourse...
I'm a seller, and my counsel has negotiated for this, and I'm sitting pretty, right? There's no fraud claim that can come back to me, right?
Well, it basically says what it says. It actually goes pretty far in trying to eliminate any such claims. It says... It eliminates any non-party from the agreement from having any liability with respect to the agreement or related to the agreement. And it basically says, in law or in equity, based upon contract, tort, statute, or otherwise, for obligations or liabilities arising under, in connection with, or related to this agreement, or for any related claim, and each party hereto waives and releases all such liabilities, obligations, and claims against such non-party. It's pretty broad. It's pretty expansive. One would think that if we are all in the contrarian world that we all know and love in Delaware in particular, it says that. Isn't that what it means? Well, the answer is no. That's not. It doesn't work. Neither the survival clause nor the no recourse clause are as absolute as they seem, because there is a built-in judicial carve-out that exists in every single agreement in Delaware, whether you put it in or not, and it's a fraud carve-out. It's not the fraud carve-out that most people negotiate, which is usually too broad, but it is a very limited judicial fraud carve-out to any provision that purports to limit remedies, whether it's a survival clause that tends to end the ability to seek remedies for certain kinds of fraud claims, or it's a non-recourse clause that seeks to eliminate certain persons who may be liable for those claims. And so let's talk a little bit about what that judicial fraud carve-out is, because the number of people who actually purport to understand Abry Partners and speak about it, but actually are ignorant of what Abry Partners actually says, is legion. I've had discussions over and over again. I've been talking about this since 2006, and people continue to get it wrong. And hopefully by the end of this session, everybody will have it right. But the Abry judicial fraud carve-out applies not only to an exclusive remedy provision, which everybody knew, but it also applies to a non-recourse clause, and it also applies to a survival clause, and here's why. First of all, human agents of entity parties actually have direct personal liability for torts in which they participate, even when they do so solely on behalf of and for the benefit of the entity. Piercing the corporate veil is not required. I actually teach a class and sometimes give that question is a true false. Is piercing the corporate veil always required to impose personal liability on officers who participate in negotiation of a, or shareholders who participate in negotiation of a acquisition agreement? The answer is false. It is not, because you always have direct personal liability for torts in which you participate, and you can't get out of it. That is the law, that you have that liability. Now, the non-recourse clause actually works to eliminate that liability except for the narrow confines of the Abry judicial fraud carve-out. So let's keep going. Delaware law has a very limited judicial fraud carve-out for contractual provisions, from contractual provisions that otherwise would limit liability for contracting parties, their agents, and controlling owners. And what it is a carve-out for, be careful here, intentional fraud respecting the representations and warranties set forth in the contract itself. That's it. That's the only carve-out. That's the limit of the carve-out. And so if you are a human agent, for example, a person, or you're a private equity firm that is controlling a seller in a transaction, and a representation or warranty is made in the contract, actually set forth in the written contract, and that representation is false, and you knew that it was false when it was made, and you actually made it because you were the seller, or you knew that it was false, even if the company made it, and this is important because a lot of people think they're getting around this by having the company make the rep as opposed to the sellers make the rep. And the facts are that Avery Partners clearly says that either one of those imposes liability for this judicial fraud carve-out for this very narrow band of fraud, which is intentional, quote, intra-contractual fraud, that is fraud within the contract itself. But let's keep going, because there's some great, this should nail it down for you. According to Avery Partners, if a seller knew the company's contractual representations were false, the seller cannot insulate itself from contractual fraud by hiding behind the company's reps. That's a direct quote from Avery. Yet people keep doing it and think they're accomplishing something by it. Liability for almost any other form of fraud or misrepresentation claim can be eliminated